If you have your scripture tonight, we're going to look at a story in the book of Genesis as we continue the series, Unusual. And no introduction tonight, which I love. We're just jumping right in. And we're jumping into Unusual at the story of Joseph. And if you don't know Joseph's story, you're going to really love this. But we're jumping in a little bit in the middle. And I just want to begin with a verse in chapter 39 of Genesis, beginning in verse 2. And I want you to see how cool this verse is, because you're probably going to want to make this your life verse. It says, "The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered." Can we get anybody like giving anything for that right there? The Lord was with Joseph and he prospered. Isn't that what we've all been waiting for? I mean, you're like, finally, we got around to that. I've been waiting for that series at Passion City the whole time we've been coming. When are we going to get the Prosper series? You know, I want to know the Lord is with me. Hey, who wants to know that God is with you? Anybody want to know that, right? And how many of you want to prosper, right? You're not even sure if you can answer that. You've been trained well. You know, I don't know. Can we prosper? Of course you can. Just call the number on the screen right here, and you can prosper, man. It's going to be fantastic. You know, we're always a little unsure, but there it is. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. So this Joseph guy that we're going to focus on a little bit tonight, he got what secretly all of us want. He got God's presence in his life, and then that presence of God caused him to prosper, and we're going to see actually to succeed in life. But keep on reading. The next part of that verse says, "And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him," now there's a cool thing. When the master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, then Joseph found favor, it says, in his eyes and became his attendant. So what's cool is Joseph has the Lord with him, but also people recognize that he has the Lord with him. That's the really cool part of having the Lord with you. If you think you have the Lord with you and you're still just telling everybody, "Hey, everybody, the Lord is with me," but they're not telling you that the Lord is with you, then the Lord might not be with you. You know, if you're having to remind everybody every time, "Hey, everybody, no kidding, God's with me." And they're like, "Yeah, I don't know." And we're not buying it. When God is with you, can I just give a little footnote for tonight? When God is with us, everybody knows God is with us. Because God being with us is never like a secret little thing. I know the Lord's with me, and me and the Lord are together, but nobody else knows that. No, when God's presence comes on your life, people will recognize there's something. They may not know what to call it. They may not know how to identify it, but they'll know something's going on your life. And he says his master, this Egyptian master, said, "Wow, I'm checking you out, and God must be with you, and everything you're doing is prospering." And so his Egyptian master says, "I have a good idea. I'm going to make you my attendant." Now, that's who you want to pick to be your attendant, thank you very much, is the person who God is with and who's prospering. And so he says, "I'm going to pull you in and make you my attendant." And that's what's happening in verse 4. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. And so Potiphar, that's his master's name. I know it's kind of a weird name, but that's his master's name. I always go back to this. I grew up with Andy Stanley, in case you didn't know that. And his mom used to teach some of our lessons when we were like middle schoolers and high schoolers. And she was always using these wacky visual aids. And this one stuck. You know why we used the wacky visual aids, right? Because here I am still telling you about it. And she was telling us this story. And she had like one of those boiling pots from the house that you'd cook spaghetti in, you know, the larger one, whatever you call that. And it had a lid on it. She just had it sitting on the table. And we were like, "What's up with the pot, you know?" And she said, so the master's name was Potiphar. She took the lid off and pulled like a stuffed animal out of the thing, and then she put it back in. It was a pot of fur, and that's what she did. You can use that. It's hard to say that name now, so Potiphar put him, Joseph, in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he, Potiphar, left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. So come on, Joseph, it's like you got it going on. He has the Lord with him. People know the Lord's with him. He's prospering. God's favor's on his life, so God's given him favor with other people. Everything he touches is turning to gold, and so he's getting more responsibility, and he's getting more favor, and then more responsibility and more favor, to the point that this guy Potiphar just says, hey, it's just all you, man. All I'm concerned about is what I'm going to have for breakfast. That's all I'm thinking about. And then after breakfast, I just start working on where I'm going to go to lunch, because you got it. And after lunch, my main thought is, where are we going to have dinner tonight, honey? Because Joseph's got it. And after dinner, I'm thinking, what kind of nighttime snack are we going to have? Because I'm not worried about anything else, because Joseph's got everything of mine under control. And everything he touches is prospering. That's pretty cool, isn't it? You're thinking, wow, I'd like to kind of be in that spot where it's favor, presence, prospering, success, more favor, more presence, more prospering, more success. But where's the unusual twist tonight? Well, here's the unusual twist. We drop down in the middle of this story, and when we pick up the beginning and the end of the story, you start realizing something kind of crazy is going on here. Can I just catch you up? Some of you know about Joseph because you've been around church all your life, and you maybe even did the Potiphar thing or saw somebody else tell this story. But if you've never been around Joseph, let me tell you about him. Joseph's father was Jacob, and they lived in the land of Canaan. Jacob is an all-star in the Old Testament, because we always talk about the God of Abraham, the father of our faith, the God of Isaac, his son, and the God of Jacob, his son, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. These are the legends of faith in the Old Testament era. And Jacob was Joseph's dad. And Joseph had a lot of brothers, but he was the one that Scripture says was most loved by his father. In fact, his father made for him this really cool coat, this multicolored coat that was highly ornamented. Maybe you saw it in the Broadway musical, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, if you saw that. He had this really beautiful coat his dad made for him. But here was the thing about Joseph. Even though he's really loved by his dad, apparently he'd gone out where his brothers were out with the flock on this one occasion and came back and kind of ratted his brothers out a little bit to his dad. I don't know what they were doing out there, but he kind of let his dad know about it. So they're a little bit upset about that already. And then Joseph has dreams. Check it out. First dream he has is that his brothers, all these older brothers, are going to bow down to him and worship him. Now, if you have a dream like that, just jumping in, he's 17 years old. If you have a dream like that as a teenager, you got all these older brothers. Here's the thing. Don't tell the older brothers the dream that you had, okay? And so then a little bit later, he has another dream. And in this dream, his parents even bow down to him. And so second rule, if you have a dream that your parents are going to bow down to you, don't tell your parents that you had that dream, okay? Just hang on to that dream. But he tells his parents. And now his dad, even though his dad loves him so much, his dad's frustrated with him at this point. And so things are getting a little tense at the house. But time goes by, and his dad sends him out to take care of his brothers who are out in the fields. And so he sends him off to a place called Shechem, where his brothers are. And so off Joseph goes to check on his older brothers, and he gets to Shechem, can't find the brothers, and someone tells him, yeah, I think the guys you're looking for have gone down to Dothan. So apparently they've gone down to South Alabama, something good going on down there. So they're down in Dothan, right? And Joseph finds him there, and as they see Joseph coming, here's where this story gets really tense. Apparently in their family, the frustration level and the tension between Joseph being the most loved by the father, the favorite of the father, the one that got the multicolored coat, the one who they're figuring out is probably going to get everything at the end of the day, and the one who's kind of ratted them out to their dad, now they're seeing him coming. And what started out as just like brotherly frustration and jealousy and bitterness and anger is now kind of like burning into full rage. They actually have gone to the point where they are hating their own brother. Now, some of you are like, you know, I know that's kind of crazy. And others of you are like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. That happened in our family. I mean, something went crazy in our family, and all of a sudden things got sideways, and I actually got to the point, some of us brothers and sisters in our own family got to the point where we literally couldn't stand each other, and it was more than just heated argument. I mean, there was some full-on rage going on, and that's what's happening. And as they see him coming, the brothers are thinking, here's where it's escalated for them. They're thinking, we're going to take him out. We have an opportunity, and we're just going to take him out. We'll kill him. And then we'll tell dad something happened to him, and dad will never know the difference because, you know, there's no closed circuit cameras out here in Dothan, and so nobody's going to know the difference. And so they see him coming, and he gets there, and they're in a full rage by the time he shows up. They take him, and they strip his coat off of him, and they throw him in a pit. It's a well or a cistern that isn't operational anymore. It's a dry hole. And they throw him down in the pit, and their plan is, we're going to kill him. And one of the brothers intervenes, and one of the brothers says, hey, maybe we can find another way. And at the end of the day, here's what they do. They see these gypsies coming across the land. And when the gypsies are coming, they think, hey, here's a better plan. Instead of killing him, which we're willing to do, let's sell him to the gypsies as a slave. And that way, we don't have to have on our conscience the rest of our lives that we killed him, and we get cash, so this is a good plan. So these gypsies come rolling up, and they say, hey, you guys interested in any slaves? We got a 17-year-old here who's in good shape and in good health, and the gypsies are like, yeah, we'll buy him. So they buy their brother, and off he goes with the gypsies. And then they take his coat, they rip the coat, they put the blood of an animal on the coat, they take it back to the dad, and they say, Dad, does this look like Joseph's coat? We found it on the side of the road, and we're not really sure. Maybe you could look at it and tell. And the dad looked at it, smelled the coat, held the coat dear, and when he did, the scripture says he just started to weep and mourn because the son that he loved so much had died. And he said he would never, ever in his life get over the mourning of the loss of this son. And the brother's like, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. We don't know what happened to him. Some animal tore him apart on the way, and we're really sorry to hear that, Dad, and we're sad too. But here they are looking over their dad's shoulder, kind of winking at each other like, he bought it. He bought the whole thing. He doesn't know what happened. This worked out perfect. And so here goes Joseph, 17 years old, off with these gypsies. And then if you look at the end of the chapter, look what happened. At the end of chapter 37, it says in verse 36, meanwhile, the Midianites, these guys that bought him, sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. So here we now get into mid-story. And where before we were thinking, man, this is incredible. I mean, this guy's got the Lord with him. He's prospering. He's getting favor. He's getting more responsibility. He's being elevated. He's getting more favor. He's prospering more. Everybody's recognizing it. He's getting lifted up. Hey, we're in the middle of a story now of a brother who got sold out by his own family. Now, last week we talked about an unusual twist of a couple of guys that got railroaded by outsiders. It was Paul and Silas, and it was the merchants, the businessmen who came after them and dragged them before the magistrates. But tonight it's more personal because now we're talking about being sold out by the insiders, by the people closest to you. We're talking about being abandoned or betrayed or stabbed in the back by your closest friends, by your business partner. Or by your own family, your roommate, your husband, your wife, somebody that close to you just totally turned on you, and all of a sudden everything was ripped out from under you, and you just were slammed down into the bottom of a pit somewhere, and they just railroaded you there. And that's where we find Joseph when we pick up the middle of this story. And what's unusual about it is how Joseph is moving through the pit and moving through the trials that God has landed him in. There are two big truths tonight, and then a couple of application things that I want us to talk about together. And the first big truth for all of us tonight is this: the pit is brief, and the story is long. And we've got to grab onto that, all of us together tonight. The pit is brief, but the story is long. What do I mean by that? I mean, God has a story that he's writing, and it is a long arcing story of his salvation and rescue and redemption. And it started before time. It's entered into history. It's overarching history. It's going to even go beyond history. It's the long arc story of the rescue, the salvation, and the restoration of God. And under that story are smaller stories, and they're the stories of me and you. And in the stories of me and you, we end up in dark places. We end up in places that we never dreamed about being. But we got to remember that those places are brief. The story is long. Let me say it a different way. You may be in a pit, but God still has a plan. You may be right now in the pit in life. You may have been abandoned. You may have been forsaken. You may have been left behind. You may have been betrayed somehow, even by the insiders closest to you. But I want you to know there's a big arcing plan over your life. Your life is not the sum total of the little bitty story that you're in right now. There's a God story arcing above you, and it's a long story. The pit is short, but the story is long. You may be there now, but God still has a plan. Now, Joseph's story, just to give you a little glimpse of the future, if you don't know, his story ends up incredibly amazing. But I don't want to rush off to the end of the story. God's arc in his life has an incredible ending, but we don't want to rush too fast to that ending. We want to learn something about the middle of his story. And what we're learning about the middle of his story is something very hard to get our heads around. But what we're learning about his story is that sometimes when we end up in the pit, it's God's pit. I mean, there are two kinds of pits. You and I get in pits by our own doing, right? That's when we just make some crazy choices. We decide we know what's best for our lives. We take control. We take the reins, and we just decide we're going to get ourselves in the position of being the head of us. And as soon as we do that, a lot of times we'll just end up in this hole, and we know exactly why we're there. We know exactly how we got there. We know exactly what we did to land us in that place. Some of you are there tonight. You are in the bottom of a hole, but it's your own hole. You did it. You made the choices. You made the decisions. You're the one who went right into that hole. And if that's the hole you're in tonight, you need to ask God for mercy, and you need to ask God to lift you up out of that hole, and he will. You need to retrace your steps, and God will do that. He will lift you back up out of that hole. But there's another kind of a hole in life. There's another kind of pit, and that pit is God's pit. You know, I know that's hard, but come on. We've all sort of wanted to gravitate towards a theology that says, look, if I give Christ control of my life, if I put my faith in Jesus, everything's going to be great, right? I mean, if I believe in God and I enter this relationship with God and I say, okay, God, I believe in you and here's my life, then after that, everything's going to be wonderful. But hello, it just doesn't work out that way in life. And that's not the way God wants it to work out in life. And his son is the biggest example that we have tonight. Sometimes in the journey, in the long arc of the redemption and salvation of God, there are hard places in life. And sometimes God actually puts us in the hard place. I mean, there's just a faint amen for that, and I get that. I really wouldn't be shouting a lot if I were sitting where you are either, but somehow we got to breathe that in tonight. And I know a lot inside of us says, I don't know, I don't want to breathe that in. But come on, Joseph's brothers didn't put him in the pit. You're like, well, you just said they did. Well, they did. But when we see the end of this story, when we see the end of this story next week, which I wish we could just stay all night and get to the end of it. Anybody want to stick around for a 10 o'clock showing? I'll give a preview to next week. But I mean, I wish when we get to the end of next week, you are going to be clapping for Joseph and shouting praise to God at the end of this story. You're going to be applauding Joseph at the end of this story and shouting praise to God and going, wow, if God could do in my life what he did in Joseph's life, that would be phenomenal. If God could use me the way he used him, that would be incredible. I want to tell you, I can't stand it. I'm going to have to go ahead and go to next week, okay? You are in this building right now because of Joseph. And I'll show you why next week. But you are here tonight because of him. You're here tonight because of him. So yes, his brothers put him in the pit. Yes, his brothers sold him to the gypsies. Yes, the gypsies sold him to Potiphar. But come on, God had a plan. God had an arc. God had something in mind. And the something in mind actually included you. And when he went in that pit, it was God's pit. And you're like, well, I'm glad he put him in it and not me. Of course you are. Of course we're glad to be the beneficiaries of his pit. But somebody else is going to be the beneficiary of your pit because God always has a purpose and he always has a plan. You may be in a pit, but God has a plan and the plan is way bigger than the pit. You're like, well, I hope it is because I'm not enjoying being in this place. I didn't want to get in this place. And I'm not saying we should all celebrate being abandoned. I'm not saying we should celebrate being betrayed. I'm not saying Joseph should have been in the pit saying, I'm so glad. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it, everybody. Thanks for dropping me down in the hole. That's awesome. Woo! Gypsies. Oh, I love gypsies. You're going to sell me to gypsies? That's fantastic. What, y'all are going to Egypt? You're going to put me on a slave block in Egypt? Oh, wow. I've been dreaming about stuff like this. This is incredible. Potiphar, glad to meet you. I've been hoping that somebody like you would buy me my whole life. No, I'm making light of it, but it's not funny, right? I'm not saying we got to stand up and go, wow, I just love the pit. I love it that the people closest to me ripped me off and left me hanging. No. I'm just saying that in that moment, there is a big truth tonight. And that truth is that the pit is brief and the story is long. And sometimes we get in holes that we dig. And don't blame that one on God or anybody else. But sometimes we get in holes that are a part of a story that's absolutely stunning. And we got to hang in there while God does his work. The second big overarching truth is encouraging to anybody feeling like you're in that place tonight, and it is this, that God's presence and God's vision are not obscured by darkness. Come on, somebody can amen that. I mean, somebody can write on to that, right? God's presence and his vision are not obscured by darkness. In other words, when Joseph got put in that hole, God didn't say, where did Joseph go? Where did the kid with the coat go? He knew. I mean, look at 39 verse 1. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. Now, we want to set these things aside. It's either you're in a pit and you get sold into slavery, or you're with God and you prosper, but you can't do both. And yes, you can do both. God can be with us in the pit. God can be present with us in the dark place. And everybody else can turn and walk away, but God does not turn and walk away. He's with us right in the middle of it all. You know this verse. It says, for the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his. Psalm 139 says, darkness and night are the same to you, God, for midnight is just like the noonday sun. That's a paraphrase. It's basically God saying, hey, even when you're in the darkest of places and I'm there with you, it's like the brightest of light. I never lost sight of you. I never lost you in the tracking system of heaven. I always knew where you were because I'm the one who was making all this stuff happen. At some point, somebody's like tonight, please don't tell me that God has got a plan for me to put me through all this hardship. It may be that's exactly what happened. But here's the thing. God never asked you to do that alone. And he didn't ask Joseph to do it alone. And the thing Joseph had going for him, that even when he was in Potiphar's house, God was on his life. I don't know where you are tonight, but I just want to encourage you, God sees you. You are not in so deep a hole that God can't see you. And there is no place on earth where you can go from his presence. That's what Psalm 139 says. If I go up to the heights, you are there. If I go down and make my bed in the depths, you are there. For where can I go from your presence, O Lord? Nowhere is the rhetorical answer to that question. God is with us. That's what we were singing tonight, and he is never going to fail us. So if God has a long arcing plan over our little short-term pits, and God's presence and God's vision are always with us and not ever obscured by our difficulties, what's the result going to be in our lives? Well, what's usual? We're talking about unusual as our series. What would be usual? You got betrayed, you got abandoned, you got stabbed in the back, and now you're down in a hole, and it's dark down there. What's the usual response? You tell me. What's the first thing you're going to do? What's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to be angry. You're going to blame somebody. You're going to try to get out. I mean, I think the first thing you're going to do probably, I'm going to go with you. You're going to hate the people who put you in that hole, right? And you're going to get on a track where your anger for them is going to burn and burn and burn and burn exponentially until it burns you up. Some of you know what I'm talking about. You got stuck down in a hole. It was somebody else's doing. Worst part of it was insiders and not outsiders. and you got the short end of the deal, you got the raw end of the deal, and you started hating them. And first it was, I just hate you. And then it was, I really hate you. And then the hate just escalated to the point that it started actually, the heat of the hate started consuming you. And at some point it just literally burned you up. And you just incinerated out of the hate that you had for the people you put in that hole. That's a usual response. That's what usual people would do. You and I usually would do that. A second response is we'd want to get out. We'd start looking for ways out of this hole. How do you get out of this hole? And the third thing we would do is we would just cash in whatever it was of faith in God we had, right? I mean, when you get left behind and you get treated this way and you end up in a hole, you're going to say, look, God, thank you very much. If this is how this works, then I don't want any more of you and I don't need any more of you. And we just cash in faith at that point. But Joseph did some really unusual things. And I just want us to kind of zero in on his life for a few minutes tonight and learn from him and be encouraged. Number one, when you're in a hole, you got to remember God's ark and you got to remember that you are not forsaken. I think the first voice we're going to hear in the hole is, well, God, thank you very much for leaving me down here. My parents left me here. My business partner left me down here. My friends left me here. And my best friend left me here. Everybody just left me here. So thank you very much for that. And we start to carry around this identity that says, I'm forsaken. But I want you to know tonight that we are never forsaken. We sang those words, but I want you to know they're true. And I'll show you why they're true. Do you remember when Jesus was hanging on the cross for the sins of the world, when he was suffering for us? On the cross, just before he died, he made a couple of proclamations from the cross. Do you remember? The very last one, he said, Father, into your hands, what did he say? I commit my spirit. But before that, he shouted from the cross. And you remember what he shouted? Kind of his desperate cry. He said, Father, why have you forsaken me? And when he said that, it went on record. People heard it, and the gospel writers recorded it so that you and I could know what was going on in the heart of Jesus in that moment. If he hadn't said it out loud, we wouldn't have known what he was feeling in that moment, but he was amplifying a truth about the gospel. And that truth was this, that when Christ was hanging on the cross, there was hostility between him and his Father. Do you understand that? I mean, this wasn't some kind of little magical, going to just switch a few things around game with God. Jesus came to earth perfect, but Jesus took on our sin, the scripture says. He took on our shame, all the wrong of our lives, all the muck and stuff of our lives. He took it on his life. And so when he went to the cross, he was an innocent man. But once he took on the sin of the world, he became guilty of all of our sin. And when he did, he became sin. That's what 2 Corinthians says. He became sin. And when he did, there was hostility between him and his Father. And he felt something in his heart he had never felt before, ever, in eternity. And he felt the turning of a holy God away from the sinfulness of you and me. And he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you turned away from me? And we all know that 3 o'clock that day, Jesus died. Before sundown, they buried him in a tomb. But then scripture tells us what happened after that. Ephesians 4 says Jesus was ascended into heaven. But it says before he ascended into heaven, he descended into the lower regions of earth. In other words, he was forsaken. He was left out to dry, people, is what I'm telling you. He didn't have a backup plan. It wasn't like I'm dying for the sins of the world, but, you know, I kind of know that, and it's going to be okay, and everything's going to work out. No, he was cut off, Isaiah. He was shut off from God. He was shut down from God. He literally died. Death died. And when he died, it says spiritually, not just physically, he went down into the lower parts of the earth. So now he's abandoned, now he's cut off, and now he's sinking down into the depths somewhere. Until the voice of his Father calls him and says, Son, by the power of God, come back from the dead. And by the power of God, he's raised back up out of the depths of the earth on Easter morning. It wasn't like he sort of went next door for a couple hours and said, okay, Father, let me know when I can jump out of the tomb. No, he's suffering. And he's separated. until his father speaks and says, come alive. And up he comes out of the grave, roaring back to life with resurrection life. But in the meantime, people, he suffered for us. And he did that so that he could say these words to us, I will never leave you and I will never, ever forsake you. And I can say that based on this reality that I was left and I was forsaken. And since I got forsaken in your place, God can promise you who put your faith in him that he will never, ever forsake you. He turned away from me, but he will never turn away from you. He forsook me on the cross, but he will never, ever forsake you. And you've got to have that cross in that pit with you. You've got to have the gospel in that pit with you. You've got to have truth in that pit with you, because the enemy's coming and going, well, so much for God, so much for the love of God. I guess you weren't one of the lucky ones. I guess he really never loved you after all. You're stuck down here and you are on your own. And you got to have the gospel and say, I am not on my own. Christ was on his own, and he's the only person who's ever been on his own like that, and he was on his own in my place, so that when he came back from the dead, I came back from the dead, and guess what? I got a new name. I'm a son of God. I may be in a pit, but I'm a son of God. I may be in a pit, but I'm a daughter of God. I am connected to God. I'm related to God. I am not forsaken. There is a long arc of the redemption, salvation, rescue plan of God, and it is going on over my life right now. I don't know how. I can't figure it out, and I can't explain it, but I know it's true because the cross is down in this hole with me right now. The second thing you got to do down in that pit is you got to abide with him and honor him, Jesus, because he's with you there and he's God. Now, the last thing we're going to want to do when we get betrayed and abandoned and get dropped down in some dark hole is to worship God, but that's the right thing to do there, and I'll tell you simply why. Well, I don't like my circumstances. Well, look, worship isn't connected to our circumstances, right? Worship is connected to the worthiness of God. It is not subjective, it is objective, and he is the object, and he is God. And once you know that, you worship him. Now, if you got information versus revelation last week, if you missed it, you got to check it out. If you just got information like, you know, I'm a card-carrying member, a lifelong member of XYZ church, that ain't going to work for you in the pit. If you got a little pamphlet that's your little six spiritual values that you've always kind of, you know, held on to in life so that you could be successful in everything you do and go to heaven when you die, that ain't going to work for you in the pit. If you're Jesus, a Sunday school classroom guy, some storyteller, some history maker, some guy that you heard about and thought he was a really nice guy, that ain't going to work for you in the pit. In the pit, you have to have revelation. In the pit, you have to have had your eyes open. In the pit, there's got to be a moment where you move from information about Jesus to a revelation of Jesus, and you really came to believe that he was everything he said he is. And if he is, everything he said he is. Come on. I mean, we're living in American Christianity, so none of us really suffer much. None of us have really sacrificed all that much, and a lot of us don't really know what we would do if we fell down in a dark hole and all we had in that hole with us was Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God. But I'll tell you the one thing we ought to do down in that hole if all we had was the Son of the living God is give him all the praise we've got, just as much as we did in this house tonight, because we come and sing all these things. You're everything to me. You're more beautiful than anything I've ever seen. You're the one who holds me. You're the one who fills me. You're the greatest thing in my life. You're the greatest thing in the universe. Well, come on. If any of that's true, what we're saying, any of that's true, what we're singing, then guess what? That same Jesus that we're singing about is in the hole with you. And no, you don't want to be in the hole, and I don't want to be in the hole, but if you're in the hole and Jesus is in the hole and he is the Son of the living God, he's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in life. He is the one that satisfies your soul when nothing else can satisfy your soul. He's the ruler of heaven and earth, then you're going to have a worship time down in the pit because you're in there with Jesus Christ, and he's always worthy of worship when we see a revelation of him and who he is. The third thing that happens down in that pit that's unusual is that you honor others. I'm not saying necessarily you honor the people that put you in the pit. That is unusual and that is possible, but that's like an extra level and another message. I'm talking about you just honoring the people down in the pit with you. You don't stop honoring people just because you get in the pit, because down in that pit, you know there are people down there with you. There are people you're interacting with down there that maybe you didn't even want to interact with, but they're down there. And at some point, we have this temptation to say, look, just cash it all in. Who cares? I'm just going to treat you the way they treated me. And then we start lashing out at everybody in life around us because we've been betrayed. So we're just going to give everybody as much grief as we can all around us. But if we know God is in the pit and we know God sees in the pit, then that causes us to want to honor him and honor other people because he sees
us. And we want to honor him by honoring them. This story is pretty crazy. Chapter 39, toward the end of verse 6, it says, so this is after Joseph's been put in charge of everything except what Potiphar eats. It says, now Joseph was well-built and handsome. Verse 7, and after a while, his master's wife, we don't know her name right away, took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. Now, this is the 5 o'clock service, so I think we could get that line out there, but I'll try to PG the rest of this, okay? So she's like, she's coming on to him. I mean, Potiphar's gone who knows where to do what, to figure out what he's going to have for lunch, and Joseph is there. Joseph is young. Joseph handsome. Joseph is hot, and she's attracted, and so she says, come to bed with me, and she's thinking, this is going to be a slam dunk. I'm Potiphar's wife. I actually could speak a word and decide the fate of this kid, and he's a slave, and a slave's going to go, hello, I was in a pit, and then I got sold to these gypsies, then I got sold to this dude, and I'm in Egypt, and I got no life, but hello, yes, absolutely. Why not? I mean, God's not around. God's forsaken me. God bailed out on me, so I'm bailing out on God. And isn't that what we do when we end up in these dark places? We start doing crazy stuff. You know why? Because we think, well, God never worked for me, so who cares about all this other stuff? I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. But Joseph was unusual, and this is what he said to her. He refused. He said, with me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he's entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. And she probably didn't like that either. But he said, my master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? That's a guy who's got God in the hole. And he says to Potiphar's wife, no way. He doesn't say, you're not my type. He doesn't say, you're not attractive. He doesn't say, I have somebody I have my eye on. He says, no way, because I want to honor God. And in the context of it, he says, I want to honor your husband because your husband has put me in charge of all this. I got free reign here. I'm in charge of all this except for the relationship that you two have. And there's no way I'm going to infringe on that. Honor is what's coming out of Joseph. And the honor that he shares in that moment is an unusual sign of the work of God in his life. And so the story unfolds, by the way, and this is kind of crazy. So she, as you know women well, she took that great. She was like, oh, great, I just got turned down by a 17-year-old slave boy. And he's not 17 at this point. He's probably 20, maybe early 20s. And she's like, great, I got rejected by a slave boy. That made me feel good. So she said, oh, thank you very much. I totally understand. That's a good position to have. I would have done that if I were you. No, she's embarrassed. She fully came on to the guy. And now she got rejected and a woman scorned. You know how that goes. And so she's not happy. And so she plots. And on another occasion when Potiphar is not around and Joseph comes near to their chamber, she grabs him as he comes by and rips half his clothes off. And then she goes running, screaming out through the house going, that slave boy tried to take advantage of me. Look, I got half his clothes here. He tried to take advantage of me. And she frames him for his honor. Wow. Put in a pit, sold to gypsies, sold to a dude, and now framed by the guy's wife. It is not going good for Joseph. And so the master comes home. Verse 19, when his master heard this story, he burned with anger, and he took him and put him in prison, verse 20, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, say it with me, the Lord was with him. You're like, this is crazy. This guy got thrown in a hole by his brothers. He got sold for cash. He got put on a slave block. He got bought by an Egyptian. And he got framed by that guy's wife. And then he got thrown in jail. And the Lord was with him. And not only was the Lord with him, he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden.
So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything. Now he's just concerned about what he's having for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He wasn't concerned about anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Now, come on. Do you think you could sell that book? Do you think you could sell that success book in the airport? You know, the little kiosk in the bookstore there where all the success books are? I guess all the people traveling every day need some more success. So they're all looking at those books when you're checking out how to do this and how to get this and seven steps to this. Look, here's our success book. Are you ready? First thing you do is you have dreams about your brothers and your parents bowing down and worshiping you, and you tell them. Second thing you do is you get put in a pit. Third thing you do is, well, they didn't kill you, so that's good news, success. So you were successful there. You lived. The second thing you do is they sell you to gypsies. The third thing happens, the gypsies sell you to an Egyptian slave master. The fourth thing happens is you honor him, but then you get framed by his wife and you get thrown in jail. Come on, would you like to buy our book? This is fantastic. You can be successful in everything you do. Come on. John Maxwell couldn't sell that book. I mean, this book is not going to work, right? But are you seeing how the kingdom of God is opposite and unusual? God is fully at work here. And he's fully pouring out favor, and he's fully pouring out success on Joseph's life in really difficult circumstances. Last part of the story for tonight. So he's down in jail. And Pharaoh, not Potiphar, but Pharaoh, he's got two servants, and he gets frustrated with them, and he throws them both in jail. One's a baker, one's a cupbearer. The baker's in charge of baking all the stuff. The cupbearer's in charge of being responsible for the cup that comes to the Pharaoh. And they both get thrown in jail, and so Joseph's in charge of them. And so they both have dreams, and Joseph, because he gets dreams, right, he interprets their dreams. And he says to the baker, who they're both like, can you tell us our dreams? They're like, yeah, I can tell you your dreams. I got it. To the baker, he says, well, it's not going to be too good. In 3 days, you're going back up. But when you get back up, you're going to get your head cut off, and they're going to stick it out on a pole outside, and the birds are going to come and literally eat the flesh off your head. God bless you. And to the cupbearer, he said, and in 3 days, you're going to go back up, but you're going to get pardoned, and you're going to be right back in the money, man. You're going to be right back as the cupbearer to Pharaoh. And they're like, oh, my goodness, thank you for interpreting our dreams. I don't know why the baker said that. The baker should have been, no way, man, I'm staying down here. But they said, thank you for interpreting our dreams. And Joseph, the only thing Joseph asked him, he said, hey, by the way, I'm not asking for a lot. But when you get back up there to the cupbearer and you get put back into that place and you're right next to Pharaoh and you kind of got favor again, could you just remember me? Could you just remember me? Like, maybe there's a place in the serving team that I could get. Maybe I could be the associate cupbearer, or I could be the junior cupbearer, or the cupbearer's assistant, or the assistant cupbearer's assistant. I'll take any job. Just get me back up there if you can. Can you just remember me when you get up there? And the cupbearer's like, oh, you better bet I'm going to remember you. Can you remember how they were fists, you know, bumping and chest bumping and all that right there? Bro, I'm remembering you, bro. You telling me my dream. I'm going back up. Totally. When I get back up, I'm going to remember you, man. Absolutely. You and me, man, we are going back up together. And then it says the cupbearer, check, I love this, what a difficult verse, the end of verse 4, chapter 40, verse 23. So all that happened just like Joseph said. The Pharaoh had a birthday, he had a big feast, he lifted the people up, the baker, he got done away with, the cupbearer got restored, verse 23, and the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Dude cannot catch a break. But you know what you learn in that? You learn in that Joseph had gifts from God, and one of his gifts was dream interpreting, and he was willing to use that gift for the benefit of others even when he was in the pit. See, when we get put in the pit, we shut down on others, and we shut down on exercising our gifts. But unusual is God's given you gifts. Some of your gifts are teaching gifts. Some of your gifts are hospitality gifts. Some of your gifts are generosity gifts. Some of your gifts are mercy gifts. Some of your gifts are leadership gifts. And you're down in a hole and you're like, I'm not exercising any gifts down here. I'm not thinking about anybody else. But Joseph is down in the hole exercising the gifts that God's given him for the benefit of other people. The cupbearer is back up in the graces, and Joseph was a part of that whole story. He was exercising his gifts on behalf of other people, even though he'd been abandoned, shut down, betrayed, and put down in a hole in the ground. And that's a beautiful thing. That shows a picture of somebody that knows God is with me even in this moment. And then the story turns, and this is going to kind of tip us toward where we're going next week. But just look at the very next verse, chapter 41, verse 1. It says, "And when two full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream." So let's just do a little bit of math here, okay? 17 years old, all this stuff happens, and now I'm getting up to the deal where I tell the cupbearer the thing. The cupbearer goes back up, but he forgets me for two whole years. So we're not talking about overnight I got forgotten. For the weekend I got forgotten. I got left behind for a couple of days. For 2 years, Joseph is still in the jail when all the guy had to say was, "Hey, there's an amazing guy down there. We should bring him up and put him on the team." But for 2 years, he's stuck in nowhere. But after 2 years, Pharaoh had a dream. And no one could interpret the dream. And the cupbearer remembered. Oh, no. I forgot that guy. How do you forget that guy? He said, "Pharaoh, there's a guy down in the jail. And remember the baker and me, when we went down there, we had dreams and he told us our dreams and they were right on, man. And I bet he could tell you your dream." And so they get Joseph up, they bring him to the Pharaoh, he tells the Pharaoh his dream. It's a part of this long arc of the redemptive story of God, and Pharaoh's blown away. And it says at the end of it, verse 39 of 41, "Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders.'" Now, we're talking about Pharaoh here. Do you ever know Pharaoh? We're talking about King Tut. We're talking about Pharaoh, the pyramids. We're talking about these guys were like gods on earth. And so here's Pharaoh up here, God on earth. And right down under him is Joseph, second in charge of it all. It's pretty crazy. And verse 46 tells us, "Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt." So, you know, why do I want to remember God's ark? Why do I want to abide with him and honor him in the pit? Why do I want to honor other people in the pit? Because God sees. Why do I want to exercise my gifts in the pit? Because when the tide turns and the tables turn, you'll be ready to be God's man or woman in that day. And if the tide never turns in this life and the tables never turn in this life, you will get a crown called faithfulness for honoring God when everyone on earth had left you behind. And that's an amazing crown to wear. Now, I'm not saying, just so that we can be clear tonight, that you should just totally abandon justice. If you've been wronged, then you need to talk to the counselors in your life, the spiritual advisors in your life, and you need to seek justice if you can seek that. Last week, we talked about Paul and Silas, remember? They were dragged in the marketplace. They were stripped and beaten and put down in the jail. They thought they were Jews. They didn't know they were Roman citizens, and in Philippi, it was a Roman colony. And so once they found out, A, God shook the ground and a miracle happened, so that was one reason they were letting them go. But then they found out they were Roman citizens, and the magistrates freaked out. They're like, "Oh my goodness, we just, you know, totally without any due course took these Roman citizens down. They could come after us and have our jobs." And so the magistrates quickly sent a letter to the jailer saying, "Let Paul and Silas go and let them go quick." And you know what Paul said? I love this. Mr. Spiritual Paul, he said, "You tell the magistrates they can come down here and personally escort us out of the jail. You tell them they come down here and we're going to get justice in the form of a public apology by virtue of the fact that they're going to walk out of the jail with us, not at night, but in the daytime. And they're going to say to the world, excuse me very much, we made a huge mistake right here. And these guys are coming out. We're coming out with them. They're free and clear. These guys have done nothing wrong." And Paul said, "We're going to get a little justice here. This ain't going to happen just some little quick thing at the end of the night." So if you need to seek justice, you seek your own counselors, the spiritual advisors, the wise voices around you, and you seek justice. I'm not saying don't do that if you've been wronged in some way. I'm just saying you got to remember in the middle of it all that there is a God of justice and he is your God. There's a God of justice and he is going to have the last word on earth. We're so busy, you and me, wanting to have the last word. You don't have to worry about that anymore because you're not going to have the last word and I'm not going to have the last word. Your business partner is going to not have the last word. A mediator is not going to have the last word. A judge is not going to have the last word. Your ex-wife is not going to have the last word. Your former employer is not going to have the last word. word. Your dad who bolted is not going to have the last word is going to be had by God himself. And when he has the last word, justice is going to be done. And nobody, I mean nobody, is getting away with anything in life. Nobody. Nobody is getting away with anything. And in that moment, and I'm not saying you shouldn't seek justice now, and maybe justice will come now. The magistrates came down and escorted Paul and Silas out. They got a public apology, but at the end of the day, they also lost their lives for the faith. So, you know, it kind of went both ways there. But at the end of the day, you might get justice on earth, but here's what you really want. What you really want is a crown called faithfulness that Jesus puts on your head at the end of the day, which says, look, you had everything stripped away from you. You had everything taken from you. You had everybody you trusted stab you right in the back, and you still honored me. You honored people. You used your gifts. You were faithful to that. You trusted my plan. You submitted to what was going on. And I want to tell you something. I want to put this crown on your head called faithfulness, and you are going to wear that crown in eternity that says, I was faithful to God. And there is no reward like that, because all those other people that stole everything from you, they're going to have nothing. Nothing. What they thought they took for themselves is going to be incinerated in an instant, and they will have nothing. And you'll be looking at Jesus with a crown on your head called, I was faithful to my God. Even in the pit, and with the gypsies, and with Potiphar, and in the prison, and then after with Pharaoh, every step of the way, God was with me, and I was faithful. I tell you what God's saying right now, over us and to us, is that nobody here is abandoned. And some of you have been wearing that, haven't you? On your head. And wearing it on your arms and wearing it across your heart. And that's been your identity. Some of you have been wearing betrayed, and that's become your whole identity. Everything you do through that lens. I was wronged, and therefore this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And that's why I'm justified in this, and I'm justified in this, and that's why I'm like this, because I was wronged. And some of you have worn, as the coat of many colors, your many colors were forsaken. Forgotten. And you've been wearing that. It's who you are. And tonight there's truth in this house. And the truth in this house tonight is that you are not abandoned. People may have abandoned you, and even the insiders may have abandoned you, but your God and your Savior, He has not and will not abandon you. He is with you. Right now. And no matter what other people have done to you, they can't name you. They can't label you. They can't ID you for life, because you've already been bought with a price, and you belong to God, and you are in a long arcing story, and He's using you. And maybe it's dark right now, but God is with you. The cross tells you that, and it tells you that He loves you.